Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, November 20th. We start today even deeper into uncharted territory in the wilds of trying to nullify the election results than we were yesterday. As the Washington Post reports it this morning, President Trump is using the power of his office to try to reverse the results of the election, orchestrating a far-reaching pressure campaign to persuade Republican officials in Michigan, Georgia, and elsewhere to overturn the will of voters in what critics decried yesterday as an unprecedented subversion of democracy. For example, reports the Post, he has invited leaders of Michigan's Republican-controlled state Senate and House to the White House today ahead of next Monday's state canvassing board meeting to certify results. This despite Biden winning Michigan by a margin of 157,000 votes, with no specific allegations of widespread fraud to come anywhere close to closing that gap. Now, listeners, you've heard about Rudy Giuliani by now, probably, or maybe you saw him in the news conference on behalf of President Trump yesterday, making wild claims about a nationwide Democratic Party conspiracy with connections to vote rigging in Venezuela, and like something from the movie My Cousin Vinny, he said, to pad the results in swing state cities, but he offered no evidence. Since there was no evidence, we will not dignify it with a soundbite just to have you gawk at his language. Sorry you don't get to hate laugh at Rudy Giuliani here. Also not laughing is Christopher Krebs, who President Trump fired on Tuesday from his Department of Homeland Security job overseeing election security. Krebs said of Giuliani's event, that press conference was the most dangerous hour and 45 minutes of television in American history. Now, as NPR reports it, the Trump campaign has made no secret that it hopes to achieve a far-fetched scenario, delay and challenge the results enough in the hopes of getting GOP-controlled state legislatures to override the popular vote totals and appoint the electors instead. So we will try to get the best answer we can now to the question, could state legislatures do that even if they want to? With us for this is Robert Alexander, political science professor at Ohio Northern University, whose Twitter handle describes him as a frustrated centrist and author of the book released last year, Representation and the Electoral College. Professor Alexander, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Can we start with Michigan, just north of you, since those Republican legislative leaders have already gone so far as to accept this invitation to the White House today to be asked to nullify the election results? What's supposed to happen in Michigan on Monday? What even is a state canvassing board? Explain that to our listeners. And how much power does the legislature have to nullify whatever it does?
Well, the last few days have been a true roller coaster for those following the events in Michigan with the local Wayne County, trying to not certify votes and the arguments over Zoom there. Pretty crazy times. Monday, the State Board of Canvassers is supposed to meet and certify the votes across the counties in the state of Michigan. Ultimately, however, and this is going to be true across all states, it's state executive officials. The governors are the ones that sign off on all certificates of ascertainment for electoral votes across the country. And so the Electoral Count Act, dusting that off from 1887, is going to prescribe that in the case of any disputed votes that Congress will lean on executive officials, in particular governors. And so given that Gretchen Whitmer, that woman from Michigan, Democrat, is, as he calls her, that she has, and her Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, have shown fully that they intend to certify Biden's electoral college members. I don't anticipate too much trouble there. I mean, the interesting thing, of course, is that these entreaties by President Trump to try and entice state legislators to at least hear him out. Not only state legislators, but governors as well. He's adding people on Twitter, Governor Brian Kemp there. You know, do something, and it's a big contrast from 2016. Just point this out that in that case you had some Republican electors as well as a number of Democratic electors that were requesting to have a meeting with Barack Obama's Director of National Intelligence prior to their Electoral College vote because they were concerned about Russian interference in 2016. And the Obama administration denied that meeting. And here, 4 years later, we have a situation where the President of the United States is actively inviting interference, or he's interfering in right. You know, the duties that are going on.
Well, let's stay on Michigan for a minute. Then we'll get to Governor Brian Kemp in Georgia and the pressure that Trump is putting on him and what Kemp could or could not actually do. But one of the Michigan legislative leaders going to the White House today is Senate Majority Leader, that's State Senate Majority Leader, Mike Shirky. Last week, a spokesperson for Shirky said Michigan law does not include a provision for the legislature to directly select electors or to award electors to anyone other than the person who received the most votes. That's a direct quote. That would seem to say case closed. But then why is Senator Shirky meeting with the president today?
Well, I think that, you know, the trappings of the office, the trappings of you know, perhaps hanging out with President Trump and going to the White House might be an awful lot for a state legislator, certainly in Michigan. But, you know, that the point is very clear that, you know, state legislatures, the Constitution does allow them to have the right to direct the appointment of electors. And all state legislatures, including Michigan, have already done that. And they did that prior to the election, and they said that that would be through a popular vote. So, you know, I think getting the ear of the president and having, you know, the opportunity to have that conversation maybe is too much, and he just didn't want to kind of set it aside. But it certainly invites additional drama where most would suggest that there should be no drama, given the fact that the margin of victory in Michigan is pretty substantial. It's well over 2% right now, which was much more than what we saw 4 years ago.
And that 2% is 157,000 votes at last count. So the president and Giuliani and anyone else interested would have to find that much voter fraud in order to legitimately nullify the election. But I am still concerned about whether they might just change the perception enough and the politics for the state legislators that they would do it anyway. Because as I'm looking to parse Shirky's statement, the one that I just quoted from last week, I wonder if it leaves him an out, because it said, Michigan law does not include a provision for the legislature to directly select electors or to award electors to anyone other than the person who received the most votes. And the whole Giuliani stage show yesterday was designed to, I think, give political cover, even without evidence, to legislators who want to say there is doubt, there is uncertainty about who won the most votes in my state. We can't really say with certainty, because there's the possibility of electoral fraud, that even though we can't prove it, we can't disprove it, therefore we don't know, therefore the legislature gets it. Is there anything in the law that would stop them from doing that on that basis?
Well, I think politically, I think that's the bigger issue is, I mean, they could appoint their own electors if they so chose. They could submit those to Congress. But I think politically, that part that you said, without evidence, and that's huge. That's really important piece to say there, is that, you know, if you have no evidence to suggest that that Joe Biden did not win the popular vote in the state of Michigan, then those state legislators are on the hook for that. You have to produce something that would suggest that. I think much of what we're seeing
right now—
And
so if they tried to do it, then the Democrats would go to court, and that's where we would be. Right. But that's, since your book is about the Electoral College, what if they were still in court on December 14th, the day the Electoral College electors are supposed to vote?
Well, they're supposed to have those, you know, all disputes settled by December 8th. So many of your listeners might be hearing about the safe harbor deadline. And that's what that safe harbor deadline is to resolve all disputes so that the electors are indeed selected. Now, what's interesting is on December 14th, which is the day that the electors meet, we had a situation in 1960 in Hawaii where Republican electors and Democrat electors both met. They both cast votes. They both sent them forward to be counted in Congress because the election was so close in Hawaii. The recount ultimately determined that John F. Kennedy did win the state. And Richard Nixon, in the joint session of Congress, when they opened up the two sets of electoral slates, said, you know, I move to not count those Republican electoral votes in Hawaii. So we could see a situation like that if it were to get its go all the way to that joint session of Congress in January 6th. And again, hopefully that kind of drama would be avoided, and we'll know that relatively quickly.
Georgia. The Washington Post story today says, after the recount there reaffirmed Biden had won that state's popular vote. That came last night, the official recount. I don't know if certification is the right word, but the announcement of the recount, it reaffirmed that Biden had won that state's popular vote. It's supposed to be certified today. That certification would then go to Republican Governor Brian Kemp for his signature. But the Post says Trump has for the past several days been publicly badgering Kemp to intervene in the recount to reject ballots and flip the results. Now, Biden won that state by more than 12,000 votes, according to the count. But Trump actually tweeted at Kemp yesterday, quote, Republicans must get tough. So my question for you, Professor Alexander, is what does Governor Kemp have the power to do and what does he not?
Well, I suppose he could refuse to certify or he could refuse to sign off when the electoral votes are cast. You know, his Secretary of State has given every indication that he is going to certify those results. And in fact, has kind of pushed back on Republican attempts to, you know, I guess in Trump's term, get tough, as we saw in kind of calling out Lindsey Graham. So I think, again, politically, you know, there's not much will to kind of go against the popular vote in the state. I think that would be truly problematic, especially in the sense that they're in this kind of runoff election there in Georgia for two Senate seats. I think that if anything were to kind of spur Democrats to get to the polls, it would be something extraordinary like Kemp interfering with his own Secretary of State, who has essentially said this was fair and square and Biden won. So I think the politics of that would be the thing that would prevent Kemp from interfering more than anything.
Lisa in Nassau County, you're on WNYC with Electoral College expert Robert Alexander. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask, so suppose Trump gets the electors in Michigan to change and vote for him, and wouldn't he need all the other states as well? Is that even enough for him to take the results and make them his?
So a couple of things. One is when electors are chosen, we have two slates of electors. And if indeed on November 3rd, what happened was that the Democratic electors were selected. I think that the scenario that is being thrown about is that the Republican state legislature would put their own electors in there as well. The fact that you have a Democrat governor there, those Democrat electors will cast votes on December 14th. I have no doubt about that. The big question is whether or not you would then have the Republican state legislature throw their own electors in there. Now, along with that, you're absolutely right. You do need 270 Electoral College votes. If you fall under that 270 Electoral College vote threshold, then that's when we would have a contingency election in the House of Representatives. And Michigan alone would not be enough to make that happen.
Right. And I think for our listeners who are keeping score at home, we should remind people of the math. Biden has 306 electoral voters based on the states that he won. He needs 270, so he's 36 votes above that. That means it would take three states at least taking that authoritarian leap to give Trump the majority. Pennsylvania has 20 electoral votes. That's the biggest. The other states in play have 16 or less. So it would take at least three states, right?
It would, and again, those votes would be challenged. I would have absolute confidence that they would be challenged in that joint session of Congress when they open those Electoral College votes and they read them aloud before the Senate and the House. The fact that, and I would expect that even if that doesn't happen, which will very, very unlikely happen, that Trump is able to kind of make the scheme occur, that Republicans in the House and the Senate may have an objection, and to, you know, on the basis of fraudulent voting or whatever, it will, you know, create more drama. But I don't think it will go anywhere, even January 6th when they meet.
But tell me this, if everybody sticks to their parties in Congress in that scenario, who wins?
Well, in that joint session, it would take an affirmative vote in both the House and the Senate. They would actually, there has to be an objection from one, at least one House member and from one Senate member to entertain that objection. Once the objection is entertained, then they would retire to their own chambers, the House and the Senate, and they would hear arguments on whatever that objection is. It would require a majority in the House, which is controlled by Democrats right now, so that's kind of the ace in the hole that they have, and a majority in the Senate. And you've already seen at least three Republican senators come out and with some frustration with President Trump right now. So, I again, you know, the numbers in the joint session of Congress do not work for Donald Trump in any kind of disputed election situation.
I've heard another version, and maybe you can clear up whether this is accurate or not, because I feel like it's out there in the public as well, that analyzes that scenario with more of an advantage to Trump than what you just said. And that is
right,
that if the vote goes to the House of Representatives, then it's not the sheer House majority, which we know the Democrats have right now. It's each state's congressional delegation gets one vote. And because there are more states that have Republican majority congressional delegations than Democratic ones, then Trump would win.
That would be if what I was talking about initially, or if there's an objection to any of those Electoral College votes, if indeed neither candidate is able to get to 270 Electoral College votes, they cannot agree, they deadlock on what Electoral College votes to accept or not accept, then it would move to that House contingency election. And the House of Representatives voting as state blocks, so New York would get one electoral, well, one vote right along there with Montana and Wyoming. Trump would likely prevail, and well, could prevail in that type of scenario. I don't want to say likely because, again, the politics of it would be pretty bad.
Who wrote this Constitution, and why do we revere them as so smart? That's another show, Suzanne.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the Electoral College that the framers created is not the Electoral College that we have today. I mean, they really did expect that those presidential electors would be wise and use their own discretion, and that political parties would not be part of the process. And that went fell by the wayside within just a few elections. So, you know, when we think about what the framers created and what we have today, it's not the same thing.
Why are we talking about all these state laws, and I'm the one bringing them up, if there is this federal law that you cite called the Electoral Count Act of 1887, which you say mandates that any of these election law changes be made before each given election?
Because the Electoral Count Act, it all came in response to the disputed election of 1876, which, you know, was a real disputed election. A lot of the same types of issues that we are seeing today about, you know, questions of fraud and partisanship were at play then. But one of the key attributes of that act is to rely upon state election law. And so, you know, they want to defer to the laws that are in place in those states, and then that are ultimately abided by the state executive official in those states. So they really did defer to the states with that. But you know, again, if it's not codified in state law, then it's not codified in state law. You can't change it after the fact, and that's what it appears is trying to be meddled with right now.
Yeah. Let me stay in the weeds for one more detailed question about Michigan, and then I'll ask you one closing big picture question about Michigan. According to the Washington Post today, state law there directs the canvassing board, which is supposed to vote on Monday to certify the election, to follow the popular vote in its decision to certify. And if they break the law in that regard, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who's a Democrat, has the power to replace the canvassing board members for violating the law and put interim people in their place. But my question is this. She can't fire the state legislature. So if we get to that point, and this is a big headline on Monday, that, you know, canvassing board members are going rogue in Michigan and not voting for the person who won the popular vote, and Whitmer fires them and puts in her own people, would replacing rogue canvassing board members do any good?
Well, and I think that my understanding is I think it's split 2-2, I think.
Correct. I think that's right.
In Michigan.
Certainly for Wayne County.
And, yeah, and the thing, even in Wayne County, my understanding is they were, dispute were hundreds of votes, not thousands upon thousands of votes. So, again, it's really hard, and I say it's hard. We've seen a lot of crazy things over the last few years, but it would take some serious imagination, which a lot of us have right now, to see a scenario where, and again, we're still looking for evidence of those thousands upon thousands of votes that need to be, that would be disputed. So I don't expect any big surprises. There could be some fireworks between the canvassing board there. If anything's kind of determined how we've seen the world over the last 4 years, it's been drama. So I would anticipate that we might see a little bit more drama there. But I think at the end of Gretchen Whitmer is going to certify, those electoral college votes in Michigan.
What was it Trump said in 2015? I could shoot somebody in broad daylight in the middle of Fifth Avenue, and Mitch McConnell would still elect me president. No, I don't know if it went exactly like that, but you get the idea. So to that point, is there a lesson here, last question, that would say our laws are not actually enough to protect democracy? It also takes voluntary adherence to norms on the part of people in power, or would that be overstating it?
Well, or perhaps that, norms haven't meant anything. And we need the laws to protect us from those who are unwilling to follow so-called guardrails. That's, to me, one of the big lessons over the last few years, is that for those that say, oh, the guardrails will keep things in place, the guardrails, have failed us in a lot of different ways. So it may be to the letter of the law that, is able to kind of preserve this victory for Joe Biden. And kind of move things forward come January 20th when he takes the oath of office.
Robert Alexander, political science professor at Ohio Northern University and author of the book Representation and the Electoral College. Thank you so much for coming on today.
It's a real honor, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.